The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm from the Skyview Network remote apartment studios. We have a lot to get to here on this edition of the Brad Sessmatt Show. A lot going on a very busy Wednesday. MLB draft coming up. And a lot of labor negotiations as well. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, good friend of Sports 360 AZ, will be joining us to discuss that. And then Cynthia Freeland of the NFL Network, their analytics expert, she will join us to talk about the Cardinals, the improvements that they've made, where she sees potential trends going as well with that team within for them and within the entire NFC West. So that's coming up next as well. Our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And news just coming down just 15 minutes ago from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. The NFL and NFLPA are discussing the possibility of shortening the 2020 preseason per sources. Nothing finalized or imminent, but multiple teams, team executives informed of talks currently believe they could end up playing two preseason games rather than four. He sends another tweet after that. Shortening the preseason would allow for a longer ramp-up period, regardless of whether players agree to report a week early or two, and provide extra time for medical teams to finalize game day protocols for testing, etc. And he's going to have more reports on that as things progress. So I think overall, that is probably in most ways, a good thing. We always hear about how long this preseason is, sometimes the injuries that can come with that. It also limits opportunities for guys to show what they can do for the fringe roster. So that is obviously a tough opportunity. But we'll see if this is a 2020 vacuum or moving forward, this is how they go about. There has been obviously a lot of negotiations to try to shorten the preseason. The league wants to lengthen the season, continue to get the potential for revenue, especially for true games, not preseason games, but something certainly to look out for the league moving forward. On MLB side, the players came back and gave their proposal. Again, this is I think a sticking point. We're going to talk more with Pedro Gomez about this, but they wanted an 89-game season to go down from, I believe, about their 110-game proposal down to 89, but they still want their 100% prorated salaries. That's what they negotiated back, before the season when there was, they knew that the season was going to be pushed back. They agreed to, yes, if we play 80 games, we want 100% of that. The league, on the other hand, is saying closer to 75% of that, so an additional pay cut. And it could get to a point where the commissioner just says, this is what's happening. We're going to have a 48-game season. Again, we're going to talk more with Pedro about this, but the timeline is very interesting. And seeing on Pedro's Twitter feed last night, what he was discussing, where it's, you have to deal with the network schedules and say what you will about, big TV networks and everything like that. That's especially right now for this league. That is crucial for them because that's where they're making all of their money. Not so much on attendance anymore. It's always been a big deal. It's an even bigger deal this year. And then you also have a little thing that you guys may be aware of, the general election in early November. That's going to throw a wrinkle into everything that they want to be done. They don't want to have to compete with that. They don't want, any crossover or anything like that. So an interesting timeline. We're walking a tightrope now as baseball fans, as baseball reporters, and as the league and the players go continue to negotiate on what that could look like. So going to get more into that about with Pedro Gomez. Also, the MLB draft tonight, it is perceived that Spencer Torkelson will be the number one overall pick, the ASU first baseman. He would be the fourth Sun Devil to go number one overall. And in terms of what he brings power and a whole bunch more power. Other notable guys that have Arizona ties. Austin Wells, the catcher at U of A, is a guy that will certainly get his name called early. He's one of the, I believe, 25 that MLB is sending, you know, their broadcasts out to, or, you know, their broadcast setups, whatever it may be. Nick Gonzalez over at New Mexico State, he should be slated to be a top five, top 10 pick. He's a middle infielder from Tucson. And then Carson Tucker, Mountain Point shortstop, younger brother of Cole Tucker. And I got to talk to Cole back in February at the Dingers in the Desert event, the event that Corey Hahn, Trevor Williams put on for Project 43. They do a lot of good work for people with spinal cord injuries. But Home Run Derby was out there. Cole Tucker was out there. Nice as could be, talk to him about, you know, his journey and early major league career and, you know, why he wanted to be out here. But then I brought up Carson, and his face just lit up. Carson's a commit to Texas, so he has a pretty good fallback plan if there's something that doesn't work out for him. And it's going to be different this year. The MLB draft typically is 40 rounds. This year it's going to be 5. And you can, yes, there will be free agency signings and everything like that, but the max you can sign someone to is $20,000. So is that going to create an influx of really good talent for college baseball with less minor league teams across the country? Potentially. Also, a lot of these seniors, these fringe players that could be drafted, maybe not top five, but top 10, don't want to sign $20,000. They can opt to come back to play an additional year of college baseball. Now, we don't know what the season is going to look like in 2021. We know 2020 got cut short. A lot of that is going to depend on college football and college baseball. Those are the two programs that really fund the rest of the sports in college athletics, traditionally, at least. So that could impact it. And we I talked to Tracy Smith in a media availability a couple weeks ago about that and about what 2021 could look like. And he said, I'm not going to say anything until we get through college football, because then they know the funding they may have. Then they know, you know, that what the season could look like. What could they bring in? You know, how long is the season going to be? All of that's going to be dictated a lot by the money, and the money is going to come from college football and predominantly men's basketball. So something certainly to look out for. I know that there were about, at the start of the year, there were about 10 ASU players that were slated to get drafted relatively early. And by relatively, I'm going to say like the first 15 rounds. U of A had quite a few players as well, I'd say 5 or 6. Right now, Tracy said he's gauging about 4 will get selected. But the negotiations aren't for slating. If you think that, you know, you're worth a certain amount of money, and so much of this is negotiations, but the club's hands are tied at $20,000. Now, we'll see how teams get creative. I'm sure there are, but that's going to be something to look out for. Obviously, Diamondbacks will be picking here in the, I believe, in the 20s. They had a huge haul. If you don't really see the significance of the MLB draft, look at what the Diamondbacks did last year. And yes, it's not like the NFL or the NBA where you draft a guy and he's instantly a part of your big league team, you know, a professional highest level team and making an impact. Most cases, it takes a couple of years. Some of the guys, Mike Leake was a guy that spent virtually no time in the minor leagues. He pretty much cruised right through from Arizona State to the Cincinnati Reds and has had a long major league career. But the Diamondbacks, the way the picks were slotted for them, and that was based on compensatory with Paul Goldschmidt and AJ Pollock. They also didn't sign their first rounder the previous year. And if that happens, then you get a compensatory pick where it's essentially slotted the pick after where you picked the previous year. And that's for the first round. kind of, it was just this perfect storm of picks for them. And they were able to really, that was a big part of how they were able to revamp their farm system, make some moves. You throw in the Zach Greinke trade as well, but we'll see the full-on benefits of what the Diamondbacks have based on that draft a couple of years ago or this past year. But Major League Baseball draft is a big deal. You look at teams like Mike Trout. About, I think, 24 teams went through and skipped over Mike Trout, and they're still kicking themselves. So big decisions will be made, and it's going to be in a very unique format. And so going to talk to Pedro about that as well. That's going to be coming up next. We have Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider, talking draft, talking negotiations, whole lot more. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sussman Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and a lot going on as baseball is trying to get back to the field, plus the MLB draft. And we thought no better time than bringing in our good friend, ESPN Baseball Insider, Pedro Gomez. Pedro, thanks for joining us.
Of course, Jordan. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you as well. So with the latest on the negotiations, the players came back, said 89 games. They wanted 100% prorated. Do you think it's more the proration or the length of the season that's been the biggest sticking point between these two negotiations that seem to kind of have this hindered a little bit?
It sounds like it's definitely the prorated. Everybody I talk to, that's the sticking point. You know, the owners back in late March agreed to fully pay the prorated version of the season to the players. And now the players are saying, well, wait a second. We agreed to this in March, and now you want to go back on it. So what it looks like, Jordan, honestly, is that's the biggest sticking point. And I don't think they're going to be able to come to an agreement on anything less than 100% prorated. I would not be surprised if the commissioner just unilaterally, which are within his powers, says, okay, we're having a 48-game season, and that's it. And then the postseason will start after. You'll get 100% of your prorated version for those 48 games, which is about 30% of what they would have made for a full season. And they'll just have it go from there.
At what point do you think the commissioner is going to step in? How many rounds of negotiations do you think more that we could have before it has to get to that?
Well, if you just do the math backwards and you count about a 48-game season, you could do that if the season were to start around August 1st. So I think that there may still be negotiating going on here during the next week to 2 weeks, maybe longer, to try to get something so that the season can start earlier than that. But if it does come down to it, there's still a little bit of time. Everything I've been told is the season still has to end on September 27th. The postseason television dates are locked into the month of October. The networks cannot guarantee anything beyond that. In addition to that, they do not want the season extending into the general election, which is that first Tuesday in November, November 3rd. So there's still some obstacles there. But in terms of the season, it must end by September 27th because the TV dates are all locked in. And as much as that pains a lot of fans, who cares about TV dates? Well, that's where the money comes from. That's where the majority of the television money kicks in, which is for the owners as well as for the players.
Now, we've seen quite a schism between the players' union and the league. How greater does that become if it does get down to the commissioner having to make a call here?
It's not good, especially with a collective bargaining agreement that is set to expire after the 2021 season. These are all things working against a smooth transition of a new CBA being in place. There hasn't been a work stoppage since the 94-95 season. And that's a record that they love to promote. Both sides love to talk about how there has been labor harmony for more than 25 years. But that certainly sounds like it is in danger. And this is a stoppage, but this is not a labor stoppage. This is the coronavirus, mandating the stoppage.
Sure. Talking to Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider. Now, the MLB draft is tonight.
Yep.
Very different format, 5 rounds instead of 40. You know, if teams can sign players for up to $20,000, how do teams, do you see them changing their strategy given a much smaller pool to pick from and then also kind of a mad dash of potential free agents?
Yeah, normally we see a lot of high school players selected early on, especially, and then later on. I think it's only going to be the elite high school player now. Maybe somebody like a Carson Tucker from Mountain Point High School in Ahwatukee, whose brother Cole Tucker is with the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, you're going to see the elite high school player selected, but for the most part, I believe you're going to see college players because they are closer to being finished products who can jump into the major leagues a lot quicker than a high school player can. So, you know, I what baseball would love to happen is kind of what the NBA and NFL do, which is they use the colleges, so to speak, as their minor leagues. That's why you're seeing a whittling down of minor league teams from 162 down to 140 in all probablyhood. I mean, down to 140, yes. But the elimination of 42 teams at the minor league level, which will probably be instituted next year when minor leagues do return. It's a cost savings for the big league clubs is what it is, and it also allows them more control because if you have fewer minor league teams, no short season, let's say, you can develop those players at your own facility, your own complex, rather than having them go out and play in the New York Penn League or the Pioneer League and things like that, the short season league. So it's unfortunate. I don't know that this is necessarily a good thing, but I do believe going forward, even though it's 5 rounds this year, I believe we're not going to see more than 20 rounds from here on out.
From a player potential selection perspective, do you think if you're a player who isn't in those top 5 rounds, is it just essentially done deal, you're going to go to college, or is it the uncertainty of maybe even a 2021 season happening at full capacity? You know, where do those players potentially look?
Well, this is where the issue is going to arise, because if a player believes that he is somebody worth a slot value of $300,000 and now all of a sudden you're not drafted and the maximum you can receive is $20,000, you're going to have to gamble on yourself and say, okay, then I'm going to college. Colleges are going to love this because they're going to get a much better brand of player. The ones that normally would leave for the draft, they're going to have a lot of those players now coming to college. It's going to create a quandary because roster spots will now be more at a premium. But you might see the level of college baseball take a few ticks upward because of that. But now all of a sudden that player has to gamble on himself and wait 3 years. Or if they go to a junior college, wait another year to see if they can enter the draft. So it's a great unknown. It's going to be fascinating. Normally, you know, clubs will select 40 players every year in the draft for 40 rounds. And they usually end up signing about 30 of them. Well, with 5 rounds, you're going to have 5 picks or so. You sign all 5 of those picks. I don't know that they're necessarily going to sign 25 additional players. I think you're going to see far fewer numbers now sign each year with each club.
You've covered your fair share of drafts as a reporter. You've also gone through it as a parent.
Yeah.
What's that experience like, and how do you think this new format, what is going through the parent's head on this morning as we sit here with a 5-round draft ahead of us?
It's nerve-wracking, as you would not believe. You know, my son wasn't selected until the 36th round. So under these circumstances, his career would have ended at the University of Arizona in all likelihood. And instead, you know, he was a 36th rounder in 2017. He did survive the purge of the last 2 weeks where more than 1,000 minor leaguers were released. It just goes to show that you don't know when you're going to find a diamond in the rough later. I'm not saying he's made it, but he has made it this far and is still a member of the Red Sox system. So, you know, those type of players are not going to be around. Look, John Smoltz was a 22nd rounder. J.D. Martinez, 20th rounder. Mark Burley, 38th rounder. Raul Ibanez, 36th rounder. And there's dozens and dozens of people that were selected after the 10th round. Albert Pujols, 13th round. And those players, now you wonder, are they going to make it? Because late bloomers are something that That does occur in life, in baseball, in anything. That's going to be difficult. That's going to be really difficult for a lot of players starting today and tomorrow, as well as for parents, no doubt.
We've talked a lot about the guys that could be affected on the fringe of this draft, but let's now look at the top of this draft. Is it a done deal, Spencer Torkelson, the top player in this draft? And what do you see for him as a prospect moving forward?
Look, teams are in search of power. Spencer Torkelson has power. He has demonstrated that at ASU. There is no reason to believe that's going to stop at the professional level. I would be shocked if the Tigers do not take Torkelson with the number one pick. I know in speaking to front office people with the Tigers over recent years, they are in dire, dire search of power. They don't want the singles hitters. They don't want that. They want power, and Torkelson provides that right away. So he's somebody that can probably zip through their system relatively quickly. I would say within 2 years, it would not be a shock to see him at the big league level playing. Miguel Cabrera, who also plays first base, is probably going to turn into a full-time DH over the course of the final few years of his deal. And he's not the Miguel Cabrera he once was. So there's an opening there for Torkelson, and I would be shocked if he is not the number one pick.
You look at Torkelson, quite a few other ASU players, Austin Wells from U of A, Nick Gonzalez, yeah, Tucson native, Carson Tucker. Despite this small format, does this kind of feel like the Arizona is on full display here for this MLB draft?
Well, Arizona has traditionally and historically been a good spot for major league teams to find talent, whether that be U of A, ASU, the great junior colleges that play here, Yavapai, Mesa. There's a lot of good JUCO ball here as well. There's great high school ball here. Paul Konerko came out of Chaparral High and, had a tremendous career. Those are just a couple of examples. Arizona is, without question, per capita, one of the hotbeds of baseball. You get to play the sport 12 months a year here. That obviously helps in the development of these players. So, Arizona, without a doubt, there's a reason that so many scouts live in Arizona and scout the state of Arizona. It's because the talent is here.
Pedro, we appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Jordan, great to see you.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and we're always looking for the most important stats and trends here in the NFL to help decide where the teams in the league can improve, and few do it better than Cynthia Freeland of the NFL Network, analytics expert. Cynthia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to see you and not just be on the phone. Like, this is awesome.
the brave new world of Zoom. I love it.
All of the Zooming.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen with the Arizona Cardinals, the defense, we've seen a lot of versatility come into that defense with Isaiah Simmons. You pointed out that Buda Baker is actually one of the more versatile players in this league and one of the more underappreciated. Now that we're in year two of Vance Joseph's defense, where do you see the addition of that versatility from Simmons and from Baker's versatility helping kind of stabilize that defense?
So the way that I start looking at these things is, where most of first downs and touchdowns, how are they kind of scored, right? So instead of looking at each snap and being like, okay, success on first down is if you get 4 yards. What I've kind of done is I've said, okay, in order to get a drive, like a drive to continue, so either you're converting another first down, doesn't matter which down it's on, right? Or you're scoring a touchdown, what are the things that happen? And when you look to see what happens between the numbers, between the hashes, kind of in the middle of the field, that's where you're really making the biggest gains. You know, the perimeter, deep passes and stuff, those are splashy. They make really good highlight reels. But if you think about like running between the tackles and, making sure that those catches, slot receivers, slot receptions, a huge deal. So the versatility that the Cardinals defense now has between both Buda Baker, who lines up all over the place, and Isaiah Simmons, who in college lined up all over the place, gives Vance Joseph a bunch of chess pieces to match up against individual scenarios that he thinks are going to happen, right? So he can protect the slot in a really unique way. He can protect a run in a really unique way. And that, and slowing down, even just slowing down opposing offenses a little bit, will help Kyler Murray and the offense on the other side of the ball have this complementary aspect that really will kind of show, you know, you slow those drives down, you give the offense the ball a little bit more, like, you're going to be in good shape.
With Isaiah Simmons, you know, once the second the Cardinals drafted him, it was now, okay, you have this Swiss Army knife. Now, how do you use him most effectively? A lot of talk has been starting out as a linebacker and then maybe expanding that role. Where do you see the most value and how you're able to utilize that versatility?
So think about the unique situation that we find ourselves in. So, you know, they presumably, I don't know how much time the entire defense has been able to spend with each other. I'm not sure how people learn over Zoom. I don't know if anyone is, right? So I think the way to best utilize him would probably be in whatever he can read from the offense most easily. Because, you know, a lot of times defense is the decision tree. You know, like I was able, when we were in Arizona for the Alliance, that football league that didn't go so well, I would sit with Rod Woodson the entire day. And he said, most of defense is just kind of ruling out what can't happen based on what you're seeing from the offense. So while Isaiah Simmons is transitioning from college speed, which he obviously played a good college, Clemson saw a lot of great opponents, but while he's transitioning to NFL speed, and by the way, in the hardest division, in my opinion, in football, like, you got to put him in a place where he's poised for success. So whatever he can read, whatever he's used to, that's probably why that linebacker kind of, that's what people are saying, because they probably believe that that's like the most natural transition point to him. But I'm going to leave it to Vance Joseph. And I actually think probably a lot of slot defense is where I think he would probably be noticeable for us as viewers. That's where he's probably going to make the most kind of initial impact, just based on rewatching the Clemson film and kind of mapping it to the first few opponents that the Cardinals face. Because remember, he'll get in the groove, right? He'll get in that groove. It's just like every other rookie. It's going to take some time to indoctrinate him into the system. Mm-hmm.
The big addition on the offense, obviously, DeAndre Hopkins. And you can go through the stats, you can go through the accolades. We all know the type of receiver he is. But where do you see him helping the most within that Cardinals offense?
It's going to sound strange, because obviously when you think DeAndre Hopkins, you think of earning a first down in traffic with, like, the world against him, and then Deshaun Watson, like, flinging his thing, and somehow it just happens, and he has the ball. But one of the more underrated aspects about DeAndre Hopkins' game is his ability to create space for the other receivers. Larry Fitzgerald, and that, if they're going to have that quick strike offense again, Larry Fitzgerald out of the slot, that's going to be really a much better value proposition if DeAndre Hopkins is drawing the defense way away from the middle of the field. Space is a pretty important thing. Christian Kirk, going to love some space too. DeAndre Hopkins is going to command the attention of the number one corner, probably two number one corners, or two, you know, a safety corner, multiple defensive backs, maybe even a linebacker. And in doing so, that will open up the offense for other options. So now you have not just a playbook that's expanding because Kyler Murray is going into his second season, but also a playbook that's expanding because you have a higher probability of all of these passes being caught, because DeAndre Hopkins is just, like, you can't leave him alone. That's a bad idea. So I think that's the more underrated aspect, what he does for the others on the offense.
Talking to Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. You can follow her on Twitter at C Freeland. Kenyon Drake came in and instantly made an impact for the Cardinals when they made that trade for him. Obviously a small sample size, but now in year two, what do you foresee for him, and what are you looking to see maybe more of with a full season?
Yeah, I think Kenyon Drake showed us who he is. He's a smart player. He has, you know, you got to go back. You can even go back to Alabama. You go back to Miami, see the types of situations that he was in. He was not really, let's just say, he wasn't maybe set up for success in Miami the same way he's been set up for success in Arizona. And ultimately, the threat of Kyler Murray running helps Kenyon Drake. So the two of those things together create an opportunity for Drake to just get those yards after contact. Like that, if you're going to look at one advanced stat to kind of judge a running back on, it'd be yards after contact, because the O-line last year for Arizona was not so great, right? Like, not so good. Kyler Murray made the O-line look better because he was so mobile and created so many options, but ultimately it wasn't a great situation. So now you have an improvement along the O-line, maybe better we'll see, but theoretically better run blocking, better pass pro, all of these things. So Drake's versatility is going to be where the combination of the two, with Kyler Murray being a threat to run and Kenyon Drake, then you can get that nice, you know, play action situation where defenses actually buy it, right? Like, oh, you're going to do play action, but you don't have a running back? That's we see what you're doing.
Yeah, we're not going to bite.
You're not going to bite.
Yeah. Speaking of the offensive line, third round pick Josh Jones. I know that you highlighted him right when he was selected, pick 72. A lot of people had him slated in the first round, second round. How do you see him enhancing that offensive line?
There's almost, look, I was one of those people who had him slated. Like, I think O-line is one of the things that, you know, people, it's very sexy to go draft a wide receiver, right? But with how deep this wide receiver class was, I was like, being like, oh my gosh, go get the O-lineman. Like, what are you doing? Because there's more options. Whereas the O-line class, really, there were three that were top tier and then another four of which, you know, the Cardinals got in the third round, which is amazing, right? So like these tiers. So ultimately for me, it's going to provide the opportunity for a little more yards before contact for Kenyon Drake or for Kyler Murray, whoever's running the ball, right? And it's also going to provide a little bit more of a, you know, instead of having to dish that ball out so quickly, it's going to give Kyler Murray just one more second to read the defense, see the progression, find that space we're talking about. It's a nice, like, the whole thing works together so well. Mm-hmm.
And there was so much talk this time last year of Cliff Kingsbury and the learning curve that he might have headed into the NFL. But year two, from what you've seen from year one, obviously a noticeably improved roster. Just what do you expect for him, and what trends are you trying to track with him?
You know, the interesting part about Cliff Kingsbury, look, this whole time during this COVID situation, it's going to be interesting to see. I do think teams where you have a play caller who's called billions of plays. Okay, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but Andy Reid has called quite a few plays, right? And he has a lot of continuity on the team, very few new players, something like, you know, I think it's more than 90% of people who played at least 58% of snaps are back for the Chiefs. So that's an advantage. Same with Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, you know, Pete Carroll, like these guys who called so many plays. That's, and by the way, if they have a quarterback that's the same from year to year, that's going to be a big help. But I think Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury coming in together is a big advantage for the Cardinals because they're learning kind of together. And while I don't think COVID's the best situation for a young quarterback, just period, full stop, like no matter which team or whatever, I do think that you saw the marriage of, you know, what kind of plays Cliff Kingsbury really like just has the feel for and what kind of production Kyler Murray just really has the feel for, and they really matched well. So that matching to me, it allows it, it's going to, we don't know exactly, like I said, we don't know how people learn over video chats, but I do think that, you know, that them coming in together is an advantage over some other coaches who, you know, having to learn a new system with a new core, like Mike McCarthy's called a billion plays, but he doesn't know any of those players yet. Right. Like, so it's going to be, it's like, I don't even know how, like, that's a lot harder to forecast than something like Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray really going at it together with a much improved roster. Mm-hmm.
You can follow Cynthia at C Freeland on Twitter. Thanks so much, Cynthia, for the insight. And as always, and just appreciate it and hope to see you here on Zoom soon again.
You know it. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and special thanks to Pedro Gomez and Cynthia Freeland for helping us break down the what's been going on in the MLB and in the NFL as well. Before we go, I wanted to talk a little bit about the newest Arizona Cardinal, DeAndre Hopkins. Only been here a couple of months. Never gotten to meet him in person yet. But just have been impressed with the way he's gone about what he's been doing on and off the field. And I think, you know, for a lot of people that know his story, they know the story, you know, his relationship with his mother. I know Mina Kimes and both Sarah Barshop as well did really good stories on their relationship. But also over the past couple of weeks, we've seen more and more of, I guess, him and the way he does things come out. And it's been I think he's a big, he's very intentional with what he does. Why he wears number 10. That story came out last week. He wears number 10 because I believe his cousin went to jail 10 years, $600 worth of drugs. As he's gone through the NFL, you know, they'll always do those intros. Hey, I'm, you know, so-and-so from this college. Here's my position. He doesn't say Clemson. And, he'll often throw out his high school or his, elementary school. You know, some guys get creative with that. Obviously, Terrell Suggs did Ball So Hard University one time on a couple of different occasions. But the reason he doesn't is because there are buildings on Clemson's campus, like buildings named after John C. Calhoun. And he is now working to get that renamed. And John C. Calhoun was a slave owner and was very supportive of the slave industry. But him and Deshaun Watson have both come out and spoken out against that, and they're trying to make that change right now. Dabo Swinney has been in some hot water the past couple of weeks. He has gone and spoken out, and I felt in his social media kind of shown his relationship and perfectly described Dabo Swinney to him and the type of person that he is and that sort of thing. So it's we've known him as an Arizona Cardinal less than 3 months. But you can already tell he's a very thoughtful person that will speak his mind, is well thought out with the way he carries things and is very intentional with his actions. So we've seen some of these stories start to sprinkle out more and more about him. It's obviously he makes a huge impact for the Cardinals on the field. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does in the community. He, put forth money, towards COVID support in Arizona before even getting in the state. So just interested to get to know DeAndre Hopkins, the person. And obviously, Cardinals fans are no strangers to wide receivers who are well thought out and big on community with Larry Fitzgerald. Christian Kirk is also making an impact in not a lot of time with the Arizona Cardinals. So just looking forward to getting to a point where we're in person and can get to know him a little bit more. Appreciate the work of Jared Nielsen, making sure we're getting on air, sounding good, looking good. Appreciate Pedro Gomez and Cynthia Freeland for joining us today. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show. Have a great Thursday.